Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is A.B. Dawji, and of course, this is The Big Picture. And you know what? It's really great to be with you once again. Really nice visiting you every Saturday for tea and naan katai. And it's so wonderful here in Durban. Lovely weather. Durban is the best place in the world. Alhamdulillah. I've traveled to so many cities all over, but I just love Durban. As for Johannesburg, oof, the least said, the better. So let's look first at the weird and wonderful stories that made it into the media. We have lots to cover today. Now look here. When it comes to food, I am a traditionalist. I am a tarkari man. Aloo gosh and rice with some gajar achar. That's a taste of heaven. Some lekker papri mutia and I'm a happy man. After I polish off a mountain of curry khichri, my eyelids become like a ton of bricks. And what's my name then? A.B. Drowsy. A simple tin fish in chutney, with fresh hot roti. Now you're talking, Habibi. Now you're talking. So, you get the picture, right? Not for me, pasta and casta and strange things in casseroles and fusion foods. That's a new thing, fusion foods. And only if I'm dizzy with hunger will I have a burger or a pizza. Otherwise, chops kalya with lekker fried red potatoes. Okay, enough of that. And when it comes to bread also, I am not into all this funny stuff. By that I mean, if you go to Checkers, if you go to the bread department, you'll find a whole variety of breads. Some monstrosity with pumpkin seeds and crushed rose petals. What kind of bread is that, eh? There is a bread with apple and pomegranate slivers. Good heavens. Me, I stick to bread that is just simply brown or white. Not something that will break your teeth with all kinds of things inside there. And here's something that is bound to eventually make it to our bread shelves at Checkers or Pick n Pay. It has been launched in Finland. Listen to this from the British Guardian newspaper. A Finnish bakery has launched what it claims to be the world's first insect-based bread to be offered to consumers in stores. The bread, made using flour ground from dried crickets. I'm talking about the insects here. Dried crickets as well as wheat flour and seeds has more protein than normal wheat bread. Each loaf contains about 70 crickets and costs 3.99 euro. That's about 70 rands when I looked at the rand yesterday. It's fallen, eh? Compared to 2 or 3 euros for a regular wheat loaf. And Johanny Sibakov, the head of innovation at the bakery firm known as Fazer, he says, it offers consumers a good protein source and also gives them an easy way to familiarize themselves with insect-based foods. The demand to find more food sources and a desire to treat animals more humanely have raised interest in using insects as a protein source in Western countries. Finland, in November, joined 5 other European countries, Britain, the Netherlands, Belgium, Austria and Denmark in allowing insects to be raised and marketed for food use. Sibakov said, Fazer developed the bread last summer and waited for legislation to be passed in Finland for the launch. And Sara Koivisto, a student from Helsinki, after trying the bread said, I don't taste the difference. It tastes like bread. Due to a limited supply of crickets, the bread will initially be sold in 11 Fazer bakery stores in Helsinki's hypermarkets, but the company plans to offer it in all its 47 stores by next year. Now look here, my dear ladies. If it ever makes it to our supermarket shelves, Pick and Pay or whatever, if it ever makes it to the bread shelves, don't you dare buy a loaf. Take it home and put a few slices on the dinner table and say to the bali, taste this and tell me what you think of it. It's very healthy and good to get your pet down. Then I'll tell you what it is made of. You ladies can be so cruel, eh? So cruel. And the final word on that, anyone for crickets? So there you are. Lots of strange new things happening in this strange new world. One of the issues that has surfaced recently is the subject of gender. Now, there's a whole new debate about how we should not discriminate, or should I say, we shouldn't differentiate between males and females. It's called being gender neutral. Already all over the Western world, there have been a change. There has been a change in the way public toilets are demarcated. No more a door with a sign saying ladies or another one saying gents. No. That's discrimination. Now you will see a door with both a male and female logo. It's about being gender neutral. And you know what? I think right now at O.R. Tambo Airport in the slow lounge, they've got this kind of setup. So the message is clear. Do not have separate facilities for men and women. Gender neutral. That's what it's all about. And all this sometimes goes a bit too far. Here's an article from the British Telegraph newspaper this week. And it says here, teachers should not refer to pupils as girls or ladies because it means they are constantly reminded of their gender, the government's former mental health chief has said. And who's the chief? Natasha Devon told head teachers of the country's leading girls' school that they should be using gender-neutral language when they address their students. And she added that the same applied for boys. Speaking at the Girls' School Association's annual conference in Manchester, she said that she would never walk into a room in an all-girls school and say to the girls or ladies, or call them by, or say girls or ladies, because it was, in her words, patronizing. Ms. Devon said that rather than addressing children as boys or girls, teachers should use gender-neutral terms such as pupils, students, or just the word people. And she says, I think actually, in some ways, boys are more constrained by the expectation of their gender. And whilst that is being challenged and changed, I don't think it's helpful to keep saying girls, 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 boys, 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 because that is so much implication that potentially goes with that. There is so much implication potentially goes with that. Ms. Devon said that using the term girls can evoke a sense that they have to do everything perfectly, which can create a lot of anxiety in children and teenagers. Meanwhile, the term boys carries connotations of being macho, not talking about your feelings, being told to man up. She told the head teachers, if your narrative is saying girls don't get angry or boys don't cry or girls aren't allowed to do this or boys aren't allowed to do this, then that is potentially going to have an impact on your well-being. So I hope that in taking away the negative stereotypes associated with gender, we can ultimately improve their mental health. Wow. Hey? Improve their mental health. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. I think the auntie's mental health should be checked. I detect a serious case of BDD, badam do deprivation. And it gets even worse, dear listeners, even worse. You won't believe this, and this is again from the Telegraph newspaper. It says that the Church of Sweden is encouraging its clergy to use the gender-neutral term God instead of referring to the deity as he or the Lord. The decision was made on Thursday, wrapping up an eight-day meeting of the church's 251-member decision-making body. It is the latest move by the National Evangelical Lutheran Church to modernize its 31-year-old handbook, setting out how services should be conducted. So there you are, folks. There you are. It's now an issue in this church. And you know what? A thought just occurred to me. How are they going to say the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost? And you know what? I remember in school, some of you may also remember, we had to say the Lord's Prayer. And it began like this. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. So, what is that going, what's that going to be changing to? Will it be something like, our gender-neutral person in heaven? Now, look, I'm not mocking anyone, but hey, this is really, really taking things a bit too far, ne? And so, dear Bayo, Beno, or Buzruko, I could get into trouble for saying that. I'll have to find a suitable Urdu gender-neutral word. Also confusing, Brazo. I wonder if Brazo is a neutral word. I have to really watch it. But we have been hearing such things for some time here also. For some time. For example, no more do people say actor and actress. The word is actor for male and females. And what really gets me, really, I've heard this on many, many radio stations where the presenter speaking to a group of males and females or even just females would say, so, how are you guys doing, eh? Are you guys studying hard? But maybe I'm just an old fuddy-duddy stuck in the past. Ah, the past, eh? Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. Forget it. And here's a thing that presents a certain impression when you hear the words gender violence. What comes to mind? What's the first thought that comes to your mind? That's right, a man, horrible character, beating a woman. Correct? That's the first thing. Well, I've got news for you. Men also catch it from the froze, or from women in general. Hear this from the Daily Mail in the UK. More than 700,000 men were victims of domestic abuse in the last year. Shocking new figures reveal. Men make up more than a third of the 1.9 million adults in England and Wales who say they were attacked or abused by spouses or family members in the past year. Shoo! Whoo! 700,000, eh? But you know what? I think the figure must be much, much higher. Because men would feel embarrassed to go to the police station and say, I want to report that my fro clapped me. I think the cops would look at each other and burst out laughing, eh? I suppose you will feel like a right proper alu. Anyway, here's a heartwarming story. One last one about the gender-neutral thing first. First, I'm going to talk about that before I get to that heartwarming story. Right now in France, there is a huge debate going on. Feminists want certain titles to be changed. For example, here in South Africa, in court, we refer to the judge as a judge, whether male or female. But in France, a female judge is referred to as le juge, le juge. So now they want a neutral term, la juge. La, not le. Le means female. So la is more neutral. And also, a president must not be le président. It must be la président. And a prosecutor, not le prosecuteur. Now onwards, it's la prosecuteur. And so on. Sacre bleu, it's all so confusing. Oui? I wonder how far the gender neutral thing will go. I'm looking right out of the window at the moment, at the road, and I see a manhole cover. I wonder what that will change to. Okay, here's a nice, heartwarming story that I promised you. I read it today. It's from the good old US of A. And it says here, says here, I wonder if I should read that story. Got quite a few things to go over. All right, here's the story. Kate McClure was driving to Philadelphia in October when she ran out of fuel and decided to leave her vehicle to walk to the nearest petrol station. And she says, my heart was beating out of my chest. I pulled over as far as I could and got out of the car to head to the nearest petrol station. That's when I met Johnny. Johnny Bobbitt Jr. has been living on the streets of Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania's largest city, for the past 18 months and spends every day sitting on the side of the road holding a sign asking strangers for help. She says he saw me pull over and knew something was wrong. He told me to get back in the car and lock the doors. A few minutes later, he comes back with a red gas petrol can, using his last $20 to make sure I could get home safe. Johnny did not ask me for a dollar and I couldn't repay him at that moment because I didn't have any cash. But I have been stopping by his spot for the past few weeks. I repaid him for the gas, gave him a jacket, gloves, a hat, warm socks, and I gave him a few dollars every time I see him. He is such a great guy, and talking to him each time I see him making me want to help him more. Every time I see him makes me want to help him more and more. Inspired by his act of kindness, she and her boyfriend Mark D'Amico decided to start something called GoFundMe page on the internet with the goal of raising $10,000 to get the former Marine veteran, he was a war veteran, to get him on his feet again. And you know what? Guess how much she managed to raise? Her target was $10,000, but she raised the figure of around $300,000. That is a Machine worm. And so Claire McClure, well, anyway, the answer is in rands, 4,243,275 rands. 4 million, yes. And so Claire McClure had this to say. She says, with the money, I would like to get him first to rent an apartment, a reliable vehicle, and 4 to 6 months worth of expenses, she said. She says he is very interested in finding a job, and I believe that with a place to be able to clean up every night and get a good night's rest, his life can get back to being normal. So, folks, there you are. I hope, inshallah, I don't ever run out of petrol one evening on the N2 near our spaghetti junction. But if I do, I wonder if some kind fellow will come out of the bush and use his last 10 rand to go and get me some petrol from the nearest filling station. That would be so nice, eh? And now to the hot story from yesterday. Dear listeners, from time to time we hear what the Zionists have been up to. Some say that they planned and pushed for war on Iraq that George Bush launched in 2003. Or that the ISIS is the creation of the Zionists and neocons and so on and so on. But sometimes we go a little bit overboard with our conspiracy theories, looking for a Zionist under every bed. And so, the whole week I've been getting WhatsApp messages saying that the Zionists and the West decided to insult and disparage our holy day, Yom al-Jummah, by calling it Black Friday. Good heavens, what a load of cow manure. Nonsense. Even one Maulana type person posted a video of himself saying that it's all a Zionist plot to insult Muslims. Time to get a life, eh, Habibi? Time to get a life. Go look for the origin of the words Black Friday on Sheikh Google. It's got to do with the day after the U.S. holiday of Thanksgiving, when shops across the U.S. have these massive sales, and the streets are jam-packed with traffic and cars, and crazy for the people are crazy for bargains. That's it. Khalas. Nothing else. And no. Just the word Friday is like a red flag to a bull. Friday belongs to us, so they must be insulting us by calling it Black Friday, eh? 2 + 2 = 22. The Zionists, they planned it. Really? And they went to all the shops and told them to give 50% discounts. And they picked just one Friday in the whole year to insult us. Come on, people. Come on. You know what? South Africa is a democracy. And we have the democratic right to be stupid. But some people abuse that right. Please don't get offended. Okay. And then I also heard one person say, "Hi, Bo. Hi, yeah, 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 yeah. This Black Friday thing is a plan by the white people to make us blacks spend all our money and stay poor." Ish. That really takes the cake. But there have been some really, really funny jokes posted on social media. A cartoon showing a shop window. And there in the shop window, a sign pinned to the dress on a dummy, a mannequin. Black Friday special. Save 100%. Don't buy anything. But social media sometimes really gets my blood pressure shooting out of control. Completely out of control. My BP. Since the beginning of this week, I have received 6,782 similar messages. What's messages? Black Friday deal. Free Jummah at all masajid every Friday. First 33 musallis entitled to front saf with lots of khair and barakah. Don't miss out. Be early. Now listen very carefully for people who are sending me these things. The next person who sends me this message, beware. I will send Grace Mugabe to your house to sort you out, okay? And so we come to another hot subject of this week. Zimbabwe. And I think we'll just go for a break here. And when we come back, we'll also have a guest. Welcome back. The program is called The Big Picture. And as I said, we are going to tackle another hot subject of this week, Zimbabwe. Did you hear the expression, the face that launched 1,000 ships? You did? Wow, I'm impressed. And who did it refer to? You don't know? Well, at least you got a 50% pass mark. The words, the face that launched 1,000 ships, refers to Helen of Troy. It is said that she was abducted by Paris, and so 1,000 ships were launched into battle to save her. It was known as the Trojan Wars. Well, there you are. Some useless information. See, I told you, the big picture is an educational program. A face that launched 1,000 ships. And here's a new one. A big mouth that sunk a president. Who was that? Yes, the ex-first lady of Zim, Disgrace Mugabe. Look, I'm happy that Zim got rid of Robert Mugabe. And this joke has been doing the rounds. Black Friday. A free Zimbabwe for just one bob. The bullies will know how much was one bob in the old days. As I said, I'm happy that Bob is no more the president of Zimbabwe. But I must say that I'm somewhat conflicted. I have mixed feelings, a little fed up, for two reasons. Firstly, Robert Mugabe and his family have been given immunity from prosecution. What does that mean? It means that he will not stand trial for all the horrible things that he did, all the crimes that he committed. In fact, there's a very long list. So, he and Disgrace and their spoiled kids will be free to continue their lifestyle, living in a mansion in the upmarket suburb of Harare, and lots of overseas travel, and staying in their many villas all over the world. I heard that Grace bought a mansion in Johannesburg, Sandhurst suburb, for 45 million rands. Yes, 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 I know. People say, let bygones be bygones, don't seek revenge, because the focus should be on rebuilding the country, etc., etc., etc. But, hey, this fellow destroyed the country. And thousands of lives were destroyed by his action. He's a big-time criminal. And so I'm quite cross that they've given him amnesty. So that's my first stomach ache. The second one is this. What if Grace didn't hit out at the deputy president at that time, Emmerson Mnangagwa, saying that he was planning a coup against her husband, and next day Mugabe booted him out? Mnangagwa would have remained, if Grace didn't open her mouth, would have remained as Mugabe's close buddy and protected him and so on. And the thuggish regime would have continued. And after Mugabe passed on, Mnangagwa would have continued with Mugabe's reign of terror. But he ran to South Africa and then returned to Zim as a hero. Eh? Once Mugabe resigns. What hero? What hero? If he stood up to Mugabe and spoke out against the president for destroying Zimbabwe and then ran, well, then I'll call him a hero. But he ran because Grace was after him. So that's completely different. He's no hero. Well, at least in my eyes. He was with Mugabe for 37 years. But let's get our guest to tell us more about this character. And on the line, we have the independent newspaper group's foreign editor, Shannon Ibrahim. And she writes a column every week about international politics. And once again, her article, may I say her brilliant article, was published in newspapers in all the major newspapers across the country. Let me add this also very quickly. It's quite difficult to get Shannon Ibrahim for an interview on a Saturday because she always seems to be racing off to a children's birthday party, and that's almost every Saturday. And I'm glad that one important birthday was not today. It was yesterday. So from all the listeners, happy birthday, Shannon. Shannon Ibrahim, welcome to the Big Picture.
Thanks very much, AB. As you said, I must be going on 32. Thanks, AB.
Okay, welcome. Right, let's get to the subject of Zimbabwe. You know, there were wild scenes of jubilation in Zimbabwe yesterday at the election of the new president. The people seem to love him. Yes?
Yes, they certainly do. As the headlines have said, and as people have said on the ground at the inauguration, that people are giving him a hero's welcome. And it really can be described as nothing other than euphoria. His resignation, Mugabe's resignation, and Emerson's rise as the new president of the country. And it seems the whole nation is high on optimism and hope for a fresh start in Zimbabwe. And the analysts are calling Mnangagwa a pragmatist and an economic reformer. He is saying all the right things about inclusivity in terms of the future governance of the country, even about the white farmers and compensating them for the land that they lost. And generally people want to see this as a new era. I think it's commendable that he said we won't have any tolerance for corruption, incompetence, social decadence, and he will likely bend over backwards to win over the international creditors to secure loans and aid and to get ZANU-PF looking really strong before the next election. And clearly the business community loves him. But like you, I don't see him as a hero by any stretch of the imagination.
So let's get to that question. Can the 75-year-old former Mugabe loyalist be trusted to take Zimbabwe in the right direction?
Well, the present is very much imbued with great expectations, as we've said, but I really believe that it's infected by the past. And that past of Emmerson Mnangagwa is far from savory. And I don't believe that he can run away from the fact that he played a very senior role in the oppressive machinery of Mugabe's rule. And perhaps the most disturbing is that if we start right at the very beginning, and that was the fact that Mnangagwa was the Minister for State Security, i.e. intelligence, right at independence from 1980 to 1988. And that means that he presided over the very feared Central Intelligence Organization, or the CIO, during the mid-1980s, and that he was allegedly directly involved in presiding over the CIO, which was engaged in the brutal torture and oppression of thousands of Indibeles in Matabeleland. And we only have to read the report Gukurundi in Zimbabwe, the disturbances in Matabeleland in the Midlands during that period, which was compiled by the Catholic Commission for Justice and Peace in Zimbabwe and the Legal Resources Foundation. That's available at Exclusive Books, and it's an absolutely chilling read.
for those of us who haven't read the report, can you tell us what the CIO was doing in Matabele land at that time?
Well, it was a brutal period in which the Ndebeles of Matabele land were pretty much all treated as dissidents who needed to be dealt with. I mean, women, children, the elderly, some people could have even gone as far as to call it a genocide. And according to that report I've just mentioned, the CIO worked closely with the infamous 5th Brigade in Matabele land south. And the book describes, and its documents and reports described how victims were basically passed, torture victims, between the CIO and the 5th Brigade. For those that don't know what the 5th Brigade was, it was an elite unit trained by the North Koreans on the request of Mugabe to specifically deal with what they called dissidents. It did not fall within the army chain of command, and it was directly answerable to the Prime Minister's office, the Prime Minister obviously being Robert Mugabe at the time.
So when the government intent on starving the Ndebele in Matabele land also?
That's exactly right, AB. If we look at the speeches of the notorious 5 Brigade commanders during rallies in 1984, many of them actually stated the desire of the government to starve all Ndebele to death, which actually came as a shock to me when I read the book. I didn't think it could have been that bad in a nearly independent African country. The government imposed a food embargo on Matabele land in 1984, and this is after that region had already experienced starvation due to a 3-year drought. So if you can imagine, the government prevented all movement of food into the area. All private food supplies existing in the area were destroyed. No people were allowed out to buy food. And the 5th Brigade went as far as punishing villagers who shared food with their starving neighbors. They would actually be punished. And if they ever found bags of maize, they literally ripped them apart and destroyed them. So, I mean, that is really unconscionable. And if you can think that Mugabe and Emmerson Mnangagwa presided over this, if not instructed it, we don't know, we haven't got that proof. The documents in that report also show that in 1984, the 5th Brigade launched a systematic campaign of mass beatings and detentions in Matabele land south over several months. And the CIA is allegedly the main perpetrator of torture. And the report speaks about the CIO having conducted the most of the interrogations in the infamous Bulangwe and the Sun Yat-sen camps. You can have a read about those camps. It's absolutely shocking. Victims were subjected to electric shocks on their backs, their ears, their mouths. They endured water torture. There was genital mutilation of men and women. I mean, that it describes that in great detail, which is unbelievable. Systematic rape. I even read that some people were being forced to have sex with donkeys. I mean, you can't believe this happened in Zimbabwe in the mid-80s. And some victims were literally attached, both ends of their bodies, to different things and literally stretched to the breaking point. I mean, this is absolutely archaic behavior for a new supposedly democratic government. The report documents the states of witnesses who claim to have been tortured by both that 5th Brigade and the CIO consecutively. And apparently all ZIPRA and ZAPU officials were detained, both men, women, and children. They were randomly selected, detained, and tortured. And it's estimated that thousands of people were massacred. It's not quite clear yet exactly how many. Some reports put it at 20,000. Some people even say it could have been as many as 100,000. We don't know yet. But it's a time when the villages were razed, people were burnt, and families were even buried alive. And it's a history that most of us don't really know about. And if we did, I think maybe we would be a little bit slower to call Mnangagwa a hero, as many did yesterday.
Indeed. And what Mnangagwa said to allegations that he is responsible for the Gukurahundi massacre at that time?
Well, in an interview with the British New Statesman at the beginning of this year, Mnangagwa absolved himself of any culpability in the massacres in the mid-80s. He denied any involvement, and he shifted the blame to the army and the notorious 5th Brigade unit for the killings. But I think, as we've just discussed, it's quite clear that even if the army was the ones that committed the killings themselves, the CIO bears immense culpability for the torture and repression of this period. And it seriously would be hard to imagine that the head of the CIO was oblivious to what his own agents were carrying out.
Mm. Shannon, was anyone prosecuted for these crimes?
There's never been any accountability. That promoted a culture of impunity within the Army and the CIO. So further abuses were then subsequently committed, as we know, against members of the political opposition, and that was in the 1990s and particularly in the 2000s. So I don't know if you remember Operation Murambatsvina in 2005.
2005, yes.
Yeah, the government had deployed the police and the army to bulldoze the homes of many, many impoverished people in the urban areas to remove what they quote-unquote, was remove filth. And those were, of course, the hotbeds of MDC support that were specifically targeted. Someone that works for me was one of those people who had worked every day of her life to build a house, and that was just destroyed, just because she lived in an area where the MDC was supposed to have strong support. And we must remember that Mnangagwa was always at Mugabe's side throughout all of this, throughout that Operation Murambatsvina, throughout the farm invasions, during ZANU-PF's alleged election rigging, and during the time where state terror was unleashed to reverse ZANU-PF's electoral defeat in 2008. That was literally a killing spree that went on for a number of months, which replayed many of that torture. And Mnangagwa was Mugabe's loyal right-hand man, supporter. The two were so close that when Mnangagwa lost his constituency seat in the 2000 and 2005 elections, Mugabe appointed him to an unelected seat in parliament, if that's any indication of how close these two men were.
And since then, what has been his position regarding democracy and elections and so on?
Well, it said that Mnangagwa headed Mugabe's election presidential campaign in 2008, and he played at that time a very critical role in Mugabe retaining power, and he actually brokered that power-sharing deal with the MDC. And then we saw him become Minister of Defense from 2009 to 2013. And it was actually Mnangagwa that ensured that the security establishment decimated the political opposition. Then we have Mugabe appointing Mnangagwa as vice president in 2014. So clearly he intended for this man to probably succeed him before his wife became very ambitious. But I think all of this, what we're talking about, begs the question that under Mnangagwa's leadership now as president, will Zimbabweans see the political space closing once again? Will the opposition again be under attack and the media tightly controlled as it's been all these years? It's very difficult to say it's been a free media in Zimbabwe. And it very much seems that Mnangagwa's monumental rise has been nothing but a masterful stroke for the political fortunes of ZANU-PF. And I think only time will tell how much of a Democrat Mnangagwa portends to be. But to me, anyway, his track record leaves much to be desired. I've written a second piece that's a follow-up from this for the Sunday papers, the Sunday Independent and the Tribune, which really argues that the opposition, all the opposition now have a choice to make. Will they submit by joining a government of national unity with ZANU-PF, where they then it will be quite difficult for them to be building and consolidating their own branch structures ahead of these elections that come in August 2018. And they must look at how history has been so instructive that every time they've joined a unity deal with ZANU, such as when ZAPU became subsumed by ZANU and became ZANU-PF in 1987, and then how the MDC had that unity government after the 2008 elections. All those times, ZANU-PF has managed to destroy the base of the opposition, to terrorize the opposition supporters. So these are the same people in charge. Chiwenga is the same person who said to this general who committed this coup recently. He's the same general that said to Mugabe after the 2008 elections, we cannot allow the MDC to have power and we need to obliterate it. And he terrorized those opposition areas to the point that all of their branches were decimated. So I don't think that these same people could have a complete change of heart now and really truly become Democrats. So it seems to me that if the opposition really wants to have a chance at the next election, they need to perhaps not join a government of national unity. It will make it difficult to have an economic recovery roadmap where everyone buys into it. But perhaps we need to ensure that there are free and fair elections next year, and the opposition there's a level playing field where they can have elections that are not rigged and a chance to actually compete against the ruling party.
Right, so there you are, a huge question mark over the new president of Zimbabwe. Shannon Ibrahim, thank you for another great interview and for your special perspective on the situation in Zimbabwe. Take care and have extended birthday and see you soon in Durban.
Okay, thanks so much. Bye.
Bye. And here's some breaking news. Shannon Ibrahim will be the guest of honor at a function on the 5th of December at the Mariam B. Sultan Hall in Kenilworth Road, Overport, here in Durban. It's a public lecture organized by the Women's Cultural Group. She will be speaking about developments in the Middle East, so be sure to be there. And that is the 5th of December at the Mariam B. Sultan Hall at 7 p.m. Right. Let's do some light, throw some light at the end of the tunnel. You know, the streets seem to be filled these days with shiny new 4x4 SUVs. Well, you know what SUV stands for. Sports Utility Vehicle. Sports Utility SUVs. You get the Ford Fortuner, you got the BMW X5, Land Rover, Discovery. They are all over the place. Ladies taking kids to school, bullies driving to work. These SUVs look so nice and clean. I'm sure very few actually go off the road. So, the two old bullies, they met Gulambai and Ronnie from Mirbank. And Ronnie says, "Hey, Gulu, yesterday was my 75th birthday." And Gulambai says, "Hey, congratulations, boss." And Ronnie says, "My wife gave me an SUV for my birthday present." And Gulambai says, "Wow, what an amazing gift. Imagine an SUV. Whoa, ho, ho, ho." And Ronnie says, "Yep, SUV. Socks, underwear, and Vicks." This is AB Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The Big Picture program was sponsored by Steve.